We are so lucky that we have so many wonderful natural areas here in Wisconsin. I really think it's part of our culture to notice and appreciate them, whether it's in a forest, a park, or maybe on a river, too. For sure on a river, as a matter of fact. Milton Bates is the author of The Bark River Chronicles, Stories from a Wisconsin Watershed. He's lived most of his life in Wisconsin, currently lives in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, joins us by phone today. And Milton, great to have you with us. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Larry.
I really appreciate it. And I really enjoyed your book because, well, you tell some great stories in the book, but it also got me thinking, you know, there are all these rivers. We have so many rivers in Wisconsin and across the country, and they're probably, every one of them has maybe similar kinds of stories to tell. It was really fun to read about Bark River.
I think you're right about that, almost any river that you take the time to get to know will have the same kinds of wonderful stories. So in that respect, the Bark River is every river USA. Certainly it's very typical of the rivers that we have in the state of Wisconsin, the upper Midwest, and then I think a good part of the country would have a Bark River somewhere close to just about everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us where your Bark River is exactly and kind of what towns and cities are part of that watershed.
It begins in a glacial depression north of Milwaukee in Washington County, and that depression includes, it would be Bark Lake, and then also Mud Lake and Amy Bell Lake. Then it flows in a southeasterly direction through Waukesha County into Jefferson County, where it finally joins, this is about 70 miles downstream from Bark Lake, joins the Rock River at Fort Atkinson, and becomes part of the Rock River watershed, which, of course, is part of the Mississippi watershed. So
yeah.
That's where it is.
And it has some, there's some interesting types of landscape that you pass through.
Beginning with the very beginning. It was one of those places in Kettle Moraine, this place where the two lobes of the Wisconsin glaciation came together. And you have all these interesting cames and eskers and other glacial forms, including the large kettle that the river drains and proceeds through urban landscapes. So you have places, you know, such as Heartland and Delafield along the way, and, of course, ending in Fort Atkinson, a fairly major city. But in between, a good deal of natural forest margin, marshes.
Yeah.
Agricultural land. There's a little bit of everything, and I think that's part of its attraction for me and for my wife and family, that it is so varied. In a short day, you know, trip of, let's say, 2-3 hours, you can see quite a bit of different landscape along the river.
You sure can. We are talking with Milton Bates, who is the author of The Bark River Chronicles, Stories from a Wisconsin Watershed. Callers online already. You can join in, too, if you have a question or comment. We'll get to you pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post a photo or a question on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Randy and Sandra, hold on. We'll get to you in just a minute or two here. But I wanted to ask Milton, how you and Puck, how'd you decide to take on this type of adventure and your wife? Her name in the canoe is Puck.
Right. It's a nickname for Elizabeth. Elizabeth is her given name. But early on, because of her resemblance to an actress who played the role of Puck in Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream, she acquired the nickname Puck, and it stayed with her. And so this is what, we've been married over 40 years, so for over 40 years she's been Puck rather than Elizabeth.
Well, it's great, and of course you guys, obviously great paddlers and have done a lot of it, but why did you decide to paddle the entire length of the Bark?
Well, we had done sections of it, and we had a number of favorite sections over the years. We began paddling it in 1982, so we're coming up on the 30th anniversary of our introduction to the river. So over the course of 30 years, we had paddled a good deal of it. But then as the idea of writing a book about the river evolved, along with that evolved the possibility of using a river journey as a narrative thread to connect all of these stories in the watershed. Mm-hmm. And in that case, we knew we would have to paddle all of it, including some of the more challenging upriver sections that are more swamp, really, than river.
Yeah.
And so we systematically began paddling every inch of it. And we did not do it in a single summer, though that is the way it is arranged in the book for the sake of unity. It proceeds in the book from April of a given year through October of a given year. However, it probably took us several years to fill in all of the gaps along the way.
Well, and there's some really fascinating stories. Randy in Chippewa Falls has been waiting a while, so I want to give him a chance. Randy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
I grew up in Jefferson County,
mm-hmm.
and I've hunted the Bark River since the early 70s, and there's many areas where, like old mink farms, were built in along the edge of the river, and makes for excellent duck hunting. I've deer hunted floating down the river, and fished it many times. I've certainly enjoyed the area, and I guess that's really all I have to say about the Bark River today.
Oh, Randy, I tell you what, you better be getting a copy of this book. You're going to enjoy it for sure. Comment, Mel?
Well, I think, especially as you get to the lower part of the river, which would be the part in Jefferson County, beginning with the Princess Point wildlife area on down to Fort Atkinson, that is especially a favorite of hunters because there are so many little potholes with ducks. It's part of going way back to glacial history. It's part of the Great Scuppernong Marsh. So in, pre-contact times, going back to the Paleo Indians, that has been very much a hunting ground for people of two or three races. So it's not surprising that it continues to be. And in a given hunting weekend, such as, we're getting into the season now,
yeah.
You'll find that parking lot around Princess Point full of vehicles with hunters.
Well, Sandra in Madison has a question or maybe a comment. Hi, Sandra.
Yeah, hi. Congratulations, Professor Bates. I really have enjoyed your books, what I've read so far. Since 2006, there have been 4 books written on the Black Hawk War, and I keep wondering if people are going to run out of things to say, but I'm happy to say that in your chapter, you had new things to say. It was coherent and compact, which not all the books are, and I highly recommend it to anyone. I am a little confused, because before I actually got a hold of the book, there was a feature on NPR, and they said a couple things that kind of confused me,
mm-hmm.
and one was how long the British band was actually on the Bark. I think they said it was months. I read it pretty closely, and the most I could come up with was like 6 weeks, but I also kind of have the impression it really wasn't that long before he went up to Hustisford.
Mm-hmm.
And do historians, do they know, is there a sort of consensus about how long he was actually on the Bark?
Well, I'm not sure what the consensus among historians is, but what you say is closer to the facts, namely that General Atkinson arrived at the Bark River, I believe, around July 4th or 5th, and didn't stay there longer than about 2 weeks, perhaps 2.5 weeks at the most, before he was finally able to cross the river and pursue Black Hawk to the Battle of Wisconsin Heights. So his time along the Bark, let me clarify this, Black Hawk's time along the Bark was very brief. He moved on as quickly as he could up toward Hustisford, and then eventually going west as he went toward Wisconsin Heights, crossed the Wisconsin, and then eventually came up to the mouth of the Bad Axe River. However, General Atkinson got bogged down at the Bark, so it was over 2 weeks before he was finally able to bring his federal troops plus the Illinois militia across the river, and that's because of the boggy margins along the river, the quaking bogs. The horses couldn't cross. They were able to get scouts across the river by putting marsh hay down on top of the water, creating temporary bridges. And eventually, once Blackhawk's Trail was picked up, they, by this time, had begun building Fort Koshkonong, but they immediately left the fort and began pursuing Blackhawk. So his Blackhawk's time along the Bark was very brief. General Atkinson's only a little bit longer before he was able to resume the pursuit of Blackhawk's band.
Sandra, you stole my thunder a little bit, because I was going to really compliment Milton as well. You took the words right out of my mouth, Sandra. I was, there's been a lot written about Blackhawk, but I found that chapter just outstanding, and I learned I learned some things that I did not know about that particular time in Blackhawk's life. So it is an outstanding chapter, for sure.
Yeah, anyone who has any interest in that should definitely check that out.
Absolutely. Thanks, Sandra.
Sure.
Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, by the way. Maybe you have a question or comment for our guest, Milton Bates, who is the author of the Bark River Chronicles, Stories from a Wisconsin Watershed. He's lived most of his life in Wisconsin, currently lives in the UP of Michigan. And maybe you're familiar with the Bark River or some parts of it. Have you ever decided to take on a challenge like that, to hike an entire trail or paddle a whole river from one end to the other? Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. And before we get to Pat, I did want to mention, Judith has put up a link. There's reference to a National Public Radio story. You paddled with Jackie Layden, didn't you, Milton?
Yes, we did. We had one full afternoon on the water doing a lower bark from what's called the Burnt Village Wayside near Cold Spring, Wisconsin, down to Fort Atkinson. And so it was only about 6 miles of river. And then we also spent a little bit of time on Lower Namabin Lake. We paddled out to Sugar Island, which appears in the book as the site of what was going to be, if it had worked out, an African-American summer resort in the middle of this lake in Waukesha County. So we landed there and we looked around the island a bit. That along with a good deal of the rest of our conversations ended up on the cutting room floor. So it's a very brief NPR piece, less than 7 minutes, I believe.
Yeah, and we actually, Judith put a link up to that NPR story on our Facebook page. So if you want to, after we're done talking, you want to learn a little bit more, at least hear that NPR piece, you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and listen to it there. We'd love to have you do that. Pat in Madison has...
Oh, hi.
Hi, thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'm very interested in getting your book. I spent part of one of my summer jobs canoeing the Bark River for the DNR. It was a summer job that I'd had when I was in college. And what I had to do was map every tenth of a mile and everything I saw. Now this started a little west of Milwaukee and went out into Waukesha County, and I mapped the aquatic plants, the land use, any fish that we saw, any other animals along the way, and it was part of a project, fortunately or not, to put in a sewage treatment plant out that way and discharge into the Bark and see if the Bark could handle the discharge. But my job for the DNR was to map it and identify all of the things I just mentioned and take water quality samples and then do a report that modeled the ability for the Bark to handle that kind of a thing. And it was the most pristine river that I'd seen, and having grown up in Milwaukee, probably I hadn't seen too many by that time. I was in college. But it was stunning to me then to get on the bus after I finished packaging my samples and so on and take the bus into downtown Milwaukee and be in the heart of Milwaukee on First and Wisconsin, catching the bus all muddy from the day and just you know, reflecting on how close that resource was, and it actually changed my career choice. I was a chemistry major and went from thinking of going into the chemical industry to ultimately working for the DNR for my entire career. I worked then in public service, but that launched me into that career. It was awesome. I can't wait to read your book.
Oh, what a great story. Milton, comment?
Well, you're right about the quality. One of the characters in the book who bears a significant resemblance to its author coins the phrase quality proximity quotient as a scale of evaluation for Wisconsin rivers. And the BARC figures very high on the QPQ. It has the high quality, but it's also very close to Milwaukee. As you say, you can go from first in Wisconsin by bus to the river if you, you know, you take the bus out and then switch at one of the stations out there, take the long-distance bus and then switch to a car and probably drove another 15 minutes, you'd be on the river. So it has the proximity. The quality, I think, improved considerably after the Delafield-Heartland water treatment plant was put in. Before then, the water treatment in Heartland was less than ideal, and as a result, people in Delafield were always complaining about sewage, raw, untreated sewage being dumped into Lake Nagawicca, and then from there it went down through the city of Delafield and down the Bark River into upper and lower Namabin lakes. So the quality wasn't all that great until that state-of-the-art water treatment plant was put in, and it has been upgraded several times since then to remove more and more phosphorus, which is the main contaminant of the Bark River. Even today, it's still classified as an impaired water by the DNR. But the impairment is chiefly, at least chemically speaking, it's chiefly the phosphorus in the water.
Hmm. And again, Pat, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call very much. Milton Bates, our guest today. Really fun talking with him. He's the author of The Bark River Chronicles, Stories from a Wisconsin Watershed. You can join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Post a question or a comment there. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Milton Bates, author of The Bark River Chronicles, Stories from a Wisconsin Watershed. Fascinating book. I hope you have a chance to read it and take a look at it. And right now you have a chance to talk with the author because he's right here with us by phone. You can call in with your question or comment at 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. If you got a Bark River photo, that'd be kind of fun to have too. We can post that on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Tim in Heartland up next. Tim, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hey, hey.
What's on
hi.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Hey, I'm 24, and I've lived here right by the Bark River for about 20 years now. And whenever we go on runs or drive by it, it's just such a peaceful river, and I couldn't help but be intrigued by listening, because I didn't know it was such a big deal, the Bark River, and I've lived by it all my life. And there's this blue heron that always spends its time right by the bridge, and we'd always look for it and say, hey, there it is, and it's, you know, a foot deep right there. So that's just a lot of fun, and just a beautiful river. Beautiful, peaceful,
a place to be. And I know, Tim, you're going to enjoy this book. Comment, Milton.
It's funny how often people who live near the river will mention a local heron. It seems like almost every section of the river has been staked out by a heron. And I guarantee you, we have seen plenty of them over the years, along with sandhill cranes and a good deal of other wildlife. If your listeners would go to the NPR site, there are some wonderful photographs in addition to the text, in addition to the podcast. And one of those photos is, in fact, of a heron. So it's very much a signature bird along the Bark River.
Oh, so much fun. Thank you, Tim.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I appreciate it very much. Jerry and Genesee Depot, let's see. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes. Interesting story, because I live about 18 miles from Rome, and I've been bicycle riding for 45 years, and I've crossed the Bark south of the expressway in many different crossings many times. So one time, another person and I put in at Rome, and we went down to Princess Point. Kind of saw the back side of what you see up above, which is always kind of interesting. I'm involved with a bank that put up financing for those resorts, campgrounds, I guess they call them, near Rome. Mm-hmm. And I hear stories from those people once in a while about what goes on. But it's really fascinating, because it's such a peaceful place there that you were able to go the length of it. I think you set up near Houstonsford, where I've been many times, too, on the bike. And it fascinates me, but you can follow it down, and if you are careful, you can crisscross it enough so you can trail it down to where it joins the Fox. So that's my word.
Oh, thank you for calling. Comment, Milt?
I have to commend our listener for choosing that section of the river to paddle around and also to bicycle around, because that is one of our favorites going from the village of Rome. You would put in at a place called Pickett's Store, and then you can float down to Hebron. You can, of course, continue all the way down to the Rock River. But that is one of the parts that we have come back to again and again. There's an interesting event that takes place each spring, hosted by the owners of Pickett's Store in Rome, and it's called the Bark River Regatta. So anyone who can come up with any floatable device on that day can paddle down the river and have a paddle whatever it is down the river. And it sounds like it's quite an adventure. We have not taken part in that because we only learned of it recently, but it sounds like a lot of fun. So if you've got something that floats and you see it listed as an event coming up, it's probably worth trying out.
Yeah, whatever floats your boat. Let's go. Tom in Oconomowoc, hi. Thank you for calling. Tom, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, very good. Well, we have paddled a good bit of that with the canoe over the years. Probably the last trip we made, we actually put in the Neshota Lakes and came down through the Four Lakes and then past Sugar Island and took it on over west of Dousman. Speaking about wildlife, the only time in my life that I have ever encountered a crested gallinule was adjacent to the lands that are owned by the Dousman Masonic Home as the river winds through their lands. I was wondering, too, if Mr. Bates had ever done the first mile west of Dousman, and where there's so much
there's so much to see there. Yeah.
No. There's so many logs across the river and fallen trees that you can't freely paddle for more than about 50 or 100 feet.
There we go. Okay. Well, Milton, what about it?
That is one of the challenges that a paddler will find on just about any part of the river, down trees. And periodically, people will go through, sometimes it's the DNR, sometimes it's local canoeing groups, with chainsaws, and they will remove some of those down trees. But early on in the book, I suggest a couple of techniques for dealing with that obstacle. One is the carry around, which is the obvious one. You paddle into shore, and you pick up each end, and you carry it around to the other side. Another is a lift over, and that's what you do when you can't get to the shoreline because it's muddy or especially thick with vegetation. So there are ways to handle those obstacles. But the section of river that he mentioned is also one of the wildest sections of the river and the most populated with wildlife, especially deer. So it is a beautiful section west of Dousman, and then the river goes under a bridge beneath Highway 18, does a large loop, and then comes back to Highway 18 at a wayside before continuing on down stream. And I would recommend that section. It's it's private land that it's running through, but as long as you're in the watershed itself, you would be encountering some beautifully forested lands. Look like some very old trees in there, some of which have deer hunting platforms, so I think the hunters have also discovered the deer. But it is an unusually primitive and undeveloped part of the Bark River.
Yes, that's a good description. Now, I want you to know that your program reminded me that I hadn't purchased the book yet, and since I was driving past the bookstore while the interview was going on, I have just now purchased it. So.
Tom, that's great. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, you had a book sale out of this interview, Milton. That's great.
It might be a little hard to inscribe it. You know, virtually, but if I'm ever in the area and your listener would like me to inscribe it, I'd be happy to do so.
Thanks again, Tom, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. We finally have open lines again. We'll get you on pretty quickly. 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Maybe you tell a little bit about some of the industries that have used the bark and how they may have impacted the river.
Certainly the earliest one would have been sawmills and grist mills.
Yeah.
As best I can tell, the Bark River was the first waterway in the territory of Wisconsin to be developed for mills. And it began with a group of entrepreneurs that traveled out to what's now Hebron, Wisconsin. It was then called Bark River Woods in 1835 in the winter, and they set up a claim shanty, then purchased the land, purchased the site. And by the following spring, they had a dam in place, and they were cutting lumber. So that really is the beginning of industry on the Bark River, and pretty close to the beginning, if not the very beginning, of industry in the territory of Wisconsin. After that, it was one mill site after another until there were a total of 9 dams with working mills on them. Typically, it would be a sawmill first, then a grist mill, and then often there would be cidering mills related to it, sometimes turning shops for making furniture. So the river really was put to work. Over the years, those dams, the smaller private ones, have come out one by one to the point where now there is only one remaining private dam on the Bark River, and it's located between Nagawicca Lake and Upper Namabin Lake. Mm-hmm. It's known as Namabin Roller Mills Dam. And as a result of a trial by jury earlier this year, the owner has been allowed to go forward with abandoning that dam, and if that takes place, I assume it will, then there will be no more private dams on the Bark River. There will still be 3 municipally owned dams, one at the village of Merton, fairly high up on the watershed, another holding the lake level of Nagawicca Lake in Delafield, belonging to the city of Delafield, and then finally an earlier listener mentioned Rome, well, the Rome Mill Pond, that impoundment, which is the largest such impoundment in the state of Wisconsin. That's held in place by a dam also, which belongs to the town of Sullivan. So really there are the 3, Village of Merton, City of Delafield, and Town of Sullivan, that still maintain dams on the river. But it's an expensive proposition, keeping those maintained safely, so as to meet DNR standards, so that they aren't, you know, washed out and produce damage downstream. So I suspect that even, I wouldn't be surprised if down the line, perhaps the Merton Dam would go. There are quite a few cottages and year-round dwellings on the Rome Mill Pond, so I suspect that that one may remain in place. And I think it's almost certain that the Nagawicca Lake Dam will stay in place.
Yeah.
Otherwise, most of the river has been restored to its original state.
Pretty cool. I was quite interested in the canal stories that you had in there. The bark was the center of a lot of plans and project to create canals.
There was, of course, the major canal that would have extended the Erie Canal from Milwaukee to the Rock River, and not much came of that. About a mile and a quarter of that dam, or excuse me, of that that canal was built and eventually filled in, and today it's Commerce Street in Milwaukee. But perhaps the ones you're referring to are those in Lake Country in Waukesha, which would have linked up all of the lakes, and that would have been a fairly major undertaking, requiring a lot of capital, a lot of easements as you go from lake to lake. But that all that project, like the extension of the Erie Canal, never happened. And the story of why it never happened is, in both cases, extremely interesting.
Yeah, very interesting, believe me. Rich in East Troy, hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I was just curious. You didn't mention that. I used to canoe that quite a bit between Donegawika and Crooked Lake and then downstream. There used to be a dam or spillway on there, wasn't it, just above Crooked Lake?
Yes, there is a very low concrete dam at the exit from Lower Namabin Lake.
Right, you just didn't mention it, that I was just curious about it. I'm sorry. Go
ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Milton.
If I might add that... according to DNR records, that low dam, which holds the water level on Lower Namabin Lake, where it is now, stabilizes the water level. That was built, I believe, in the 1930s, so it's showing signs of wear. It's always been somewhat of an obstacle to navigation. People will try to get from the lake downstream, and especially if they have a large fishing boat with an outboard motor, they find it very difficult to get their boats over that dam and then down into the river. There's a bit of a drop, only about a foot usually, but sometimes a bit more. The original plans would have required rollers and a walkway so that people could take their boats around this low dam and would have had no trouble at all. For whatever reason, perhaps the cost, that walkway and those rollers were never put in place. So people have always had to do the best they could to get around that low dam and on down to the river.
The other thing was, I have a friend up in Fort Atkinson area. He used to go with his dad on the river. I guess he used to dynamite the river for stumps and all that, and they were creating creating fishing holes. Did you know anything about that?
No. So this would actually be dynamite that would remove part of the riverbed, if I understand what you're saying.
I think that's what they used to do. It was sanctioned. I think he used to work for the city of Fort Atkinson or for the county, if I'm not mistaken.
Huh.
And he said, yeah. He said, oh, yeah, come on, I'll show you where all the holes are in that sometime on the Park River. So they were very familiar with it, yeah.
I do know about, there seems to be a large section in an oxbow close to Fort Atkinson, not maybe less than a quarter mile upstream from its from the Rock River, where there seem to be fish traps in place. And they've been abandoned, but they seem to have been used to trap fish at an oxbow. So that was one alteration of the riverbed. Upstream, there are places that were mined for marl, which is a kind of mostly small shell, snail and mussel shells that were mined to be used for agricultural purposes. So there are holes that were scooped out of the riverbed for that reason. But those are mostly around the lake areas upstream rather than down toward Fort Atkinson.
Thanks, Rich, for calling. Appreciate your call. You you mentioned Lorene Nitaker, the poet.
Yeah.
Tell us about her.
She is, in a way, one of the inspirations for the book, along with Alda Leopold, the Wisconsin writer and ecologist, because they both chose Wisconsin landscapes that were, on the face of it, unprepossessing. Leopold had this Sauk County farm that had been played out, left to be sold for taxes. and turned a chicken coop into, you know, his family's getaway place, and then that became the basis of a Sand County Almanac. With Larry Nitaker, you have a poet who lived most of her life on Black Hawk Island, which is not so much an island as a peninsula extending from Rock River into Lake Koshkonong. And much of her poetry is based on that landscape, so she was able to take something that many people would consider not especially beautiful landscape. Much of it is marshy. It's often flooded in the spring, and yet she crafted exquisite poetry from that landscape. Became one of the major second-generation modernist poets. So I find that a wonderful aesthetic, you know, to be able to take that kind of landscape, see what's there, and turn it into art. And both Leopold and Larry Nitaker were able to do that.
Well, we have, I had an email from Connor who paddled the entire Mississippi, and he says, paddled from Lake Itasca, Minnesota, to the south, just south of New Orleans, Louisiana, with a buddy of mine last year at the age of 23. Took us almost 3 months exactly. I saw the country and met some of the most amazing people. Since that trip, I haven't stopped paddling. And you and Puck haven't stopped paddling yet either, have you, Milton?
We haven't. Since moving to the Upper Peninsula a couple of years ago, we've tended to do more sea kayaking on Lake Superior and a little bit less of the river canoeing, but we do both and enjoy both.
Well, you've written a beautiful book, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today and for writing the book. It's a wonderful story.
Well, thank you very much. It's been enjoyable speaking with you and also with the listeners who called in.
Lots of listeners. Again, Milton Bates, our guest, the author of the Bark River Chronicles, Stories from a Wisconsin Watershed, and certainly you can go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. It's the book is published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press, a great press for this book in particular, I think. And we'll give you, if you go to the site, you'll be able to see his site, where to go to get the book, and also the NPR piece that was done, that he did with someone else, and it was a really nice piece with some great photography, too, that you can see of the Bark River as part of that whole package. So it's really, really great, and I appreciate him taking time to be with us today. Great conversation. Coming up, we'll talk about honeybees, the state of honeybees, and what we can do to help them. It's a fascinating topic. That's coming up next. I want to mention, too, that at 12:20, we'll be bringing you NPR News special coverage of President Obama's news conference. So I hope you'll stay with us or just join in for in-depth coverage and analysis. That's NPR News special coverage of President Obama's news conference coming up at 12:20 this afternoon here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.